Good morning again, everyone. This is it. This is the last Sunday of the Sermon on the Mount sermon series that we've been going through all the way back to September. And so this is like, for those of you who don't know, this is like the seminal message of Jesus' world-changing, history-changing ministry, the Sermon on the Mount. And at the very heart of this teaching is showing humans how to be humans. All right, that's what the sermon series has been all about. Jesus is teaching humanity how to live up to, live into the way that we were designed to be, a new way to be human. Now, on the surface, that can sound like just another great self-help tool, like take it or leave it. Maybe Jesus is like the OG motivational speaker, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? You know, like, good motivational talks, like, we can use those in our lives. But we do have a problem. We do have a problem. When it comes to most self-help tools, shocker, they make little impact on our lives. All right? Did you know this? All right? Now, the cards are particularly stacked against us today. Because, as you know, we're living in this age that we call the information age. And just some real quick data here on the information age. It's estimated like that 1 week's worth of the New York Times, 1 week, okay, contains more information than the average person in the 17th century would have encountered in their entire lifetime. Think about that. Today, every 5 minutes, 400 plus hours of new video are uploaded to YouTube, right? Every 5 minutes, another 3,000 brand new websites are created. Another 1.4 million tweets are tweeted. All in your pocket. It's all there, right? So by the time I'm done with this message, like quick math, it's going to be a lot of new tweets out there, a lot of new information out there. 90% of the world's data has been generated in the past 2 years. In the English language, there are about 540,000 words. That is five times more words than Shakespeare had to work with. In 1945, the amount of information in the world doubled every 25 years. 10 years ago, the amount of information in the world doubled every 4-ish years. Today, it's estimated that the entirety of information in the world doubles every few months. Okay? We are drowning in information. And you'd think, okay, maybe that's a good thing. And perhaps in some ways it is. But it does have real life consequences in the way that we engage with our world and in the way that we take in information and do whatever we do with that information. Okay? The problem is that in our world today, we struggle to take in information and put it into action. Neil Postman wrote an amazing book called Amusing Ourselves to Death, and he talks about this idea of the information to action ratio. And what he basically means by that is that the amount of information that we take in actually, like how much of that actually gets translated into action in our lives. We have so much information in our lives that we don't know what to do with it. The problem started, by the way, not with computers. Like, we think, oh, man, if we could just get rid of those darn computers. Like, some of us are like, I don't even know what the world looked like. I kind of remember what that was like. But, man, if we could just get rid of those computers. No, the actual problem began with a much older invention, the telegraph. Okay? Think about for a moment. In one moment, okay, the world changed to a place where you could, at the speed of light, get information about events happening on the other side of a continent. And soon, they were able to get information from across the ocean, like that. That changed the world. It changed the way that we take in information. Right now, there are many in our nation who are overwhelmed with thoughts and emotions, outrage and trauma about events that are happening 5,000 miles away in the Middle East. Right? Our brains, our emotions, our capacity to reason struggles to even know really how to take in information like that, right? Our brains are more wired to keep up with, like, our neighbor's barn burning down. That's, like, about what we're able to do. That's how we were wired up. That's how we were made. Like, you see the fire, you grab a bucket, you rush over, and hopefully you help put the fire out. You're putting information into action. If you don't get there on time, then the next day, the next week, you help them start building a new barn. Putting that information into action. All right? You can actually do something about the bad news that you hear in your life. That is information that leads to real action. That's not the world that we live in today. That's not the world we live in today. So we have so much information, and we often don't know how to put it into action. So we get accustomed to, like, a glut of information in the world, and our response is often to do nothing. We're used to hearing vast amounts of information, being moved by it emotionally, and doing nothing, doing nothing. And so that's what Neil Postman meant by low information to aspect ratio. Now, I mention all of this in light of the fact that at the end of Jesus' sermon, he's actually calling us to action. And we've been so accustomed to absorbing information and saying that's nice and then doing nothing. So what do when there's an actual real call to action that could be bring about meaningful change in our lives? And so we might actually miss what's at the heart of Jesus' message. And that's the fact that you actually need to do it. You actually need to do it. Jesus' teaching about a new way to be human will have no transformative effect on your life, on our world, if we do not put it into practice. Interestingly, if you pay close attention to the Sermon on the Mount as a whole, you can see that this idea of putting words into action actually encapsulates the whole message. Okay, we could really geek out here on, like, the way that the Bible and different parts of the Bible are structured and put together, but even just these three chapters in the book of Matthew of the Sermon on the Mount are very meticulously structured to speak deep, rich meaning into the sermon as a whole. And so what we see at the end of Jesus' message, Jesus says this. We just heard it read by Pastor Cindy. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. So hearing and doing, hearing and doing. Now that should sound familiar if you're kind of reading the whole Sermon on the Mount as a whole, which we hardly ever do, right? We just take it in chunks and we're like, oh, I like that one, and I like that one, and I like that one. And then we hear a message. This is what we've been doing for the past several weeks, right? You know, taking just a little bit at a time. But if you read it as a whole, you'd remember it when you get to the end here. Oh, ding, 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 ding. He just, back at the beginning, there goes the Christ candle. Back at the beginning, said something very similar. Whoever, chapter 5, whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever practices what I say, the one who puts into practice. So here's what Jesus is getting at. What you do matters. This is like his just do it message. Like when Nike came out with that that slogan years and years ago, like just do it. Just do it. This is Jesus' just do it call. All right? And the end goal here is not to inform you in your life. We've got plenty of information, okay? And we need that information. But the goal is not just to inform you. The goal is to transform you into someone who's like him, into someone who's like Jesus. And not just like Jesus, but like the truest version of who you were designed to be. Jesus is like the truest human that has ever lived. He is humanity as it was meant to be. And he's saying, you can live into that. You can live into who you were made, designed to be. A new way to be human, the way humanity was designed. But that can't stop us. It's hard for us, as we're taking in so much information, absorbing so much information, to actually put it into action. And the way of Jesus actually requires us to put it into action. It's particularly challenging for us because, we love interesting facts, and so we're always gathering information. We're happy to come into a room, not unlike this one, and get fat on information, and say, thanks for the word, Pastor. And I'm always happy to say, oh, thank you, that's kind of you, you know. And just, what would happen if I was like, if every time somebody said, thanks so much for the word, Pastor. I said, well, go do it, right? Everybody's going to stop now. Like, nobody's going to say thanks for the word, Pastor, anymore. Because you might be afraid they say, okay, well, it doesn't mean anything if you don't do it. We struggle. We struggle to put information into action. Even 2,000 years ago, when they didn't have like terabytes of information thrown in their face every single day, even then, it was a struggle. That's why Jesus ends his sermon with these words that are hard, but they're weighty, but they're so important. So let's look back at what he says. So Jesus concludes his sermon with this ominous warning. Now, last week we looked at a few warnings, and here's the final one. He tells a parable about two builders, all right? The wise builder and the foolish builder. The wise builder is the one who hears the word and does it. The foolish builder is the one who hears the word and does not do it. It's a parable about what we do with our lives, how you live your life. Now, interestingly, sometimes that way that you live might actually be difficult to see. Right? A year ago, we briefly looked at this passage in a sermon series that we did on deconstruction, and we noted the fact that Jesus was teaching this lesson in the Galilee region that was it surrounded this large lake called the Sea of Galilee. And the communities who lived in this part of the world, they had a livelihood on that lake. They were fishermen. That lake was important to them. And so they would build their communities right near the lake. And so many of their homes were built in these towns. And during the dry months, the ground in that region is like hard as a rock, okay? It doesn't look like or feel like sand. It's hard, hard ground. But anyone who has been around long enough to have seen heavy rains come down would have known that when torrential rains come down, that seemingly hard ground would be revealed to be nothing more than sand. Right? So a house that was built on what looked like rock when it was dry would fundamentally be compromised at its most important structural point, the foundation. Right? So over time, people learned that if you wanted your house to last longer than a year, right, you had to dig through that hard layer of sand to the immovable bedrock that was below. That's just basic engineering. Like, most of us get that without ever having taken an engineering class, okay? And that's what they learned over time. But with that accumulated information, people took action. The information came in and the action went out, wisely building their house on the bedrock, not on the sand above the bedrock. And if they learned all the information about the sand and the rock and the rain and they still built their homes on the sand, that would be like the most foolish thing that they could do, would it not? That's the context in which Jesus says, don't just listen. Don't just take in the information. Put it into action. Do it. Now, the parable is about more than just the importance of taking action, but it's also about the reality of catastrophe in our lives. So let's just do a quick compare and contrast between a couple of these verses, verse 25 and verse 27. We got them up here? Okay, just quick look up there. What do we notice is the same? Yeah, like all of those first words, right? Okay. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall. Okay, so pretty much almost that first part, almost exactly the same. So what are these two verses? Well, one is about the wise person's house that's built on the rock, and the other is about the foolish person's house that was built on the sand. But they both experience catastrophe in the sense the rain comes for both of them. The floods come for both of them. All right? One thing that we can count on in a broken world is broken stuff happening. All right? Rains are going to come. the streams are going to rise, whether that's actual streams or like figurative streams, like problems in your life, inflation, like we can count on that. War, sadly, yes, we're seeing that around our globe. Corrupt politicians, count on it. Cancer, sadly, count on it. Unemployment, yes. Injustice, yes, we are surrounded by these things in a broken world. Now, that doesn't mean we don't do anything about those things, but we need to be aware that those are the rains that are going to come in our lives. Last week, we talked about watching out for false prophets. They're going to tell you what your ears want to hear. And we will legitimize those false prophets as true prophets because they're telling us what we want them to hear. No. We need to vet what we hear by way of the words of Jesus himself, by way of the character of Jesus. All that to say, there are false prophets in this world who will tell you, well, if you do A, B, and C, your life's going to be great. If you don't do X, Y, and Z, then God will bless you and your life, in your life you won't suffer. That's like a prosperity gospel that too many of us get suckered into by false teachers because it's what we want to hear. It's what we want to hear. But what do we see in Jesus' parable? We see that the rains fall, that the floods rise on both the wise and the foolish builders' homes. But what is the difference? The difference is the foundation. One is built on the sand and one is built on the rock. And you might look at your life and you might look at your neighbor and you might compare yourself to a coworker or a classmate or family members. And from a distance, you might not be able to tell the difference between the one who puts the words into practice and the one who does not. That is until the floods come, right? And make no mistake, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when the storm will come. Is this scaring you, by the way? It should. It should. Like, let's be clear, that's the rhetorical aim of the end of Jesus' message. Like, some of us might be like, Jesus, that might not be the best way to go. Can you make people feel a little bit better at the end of your message? Like, no, Jesus is being very clear, like, catastrophe is coming. Are you going to be ready? You need to do what I say. It is unapologetically ominous, all right? The Son of God dropped into the dark, cold reality of a broken world. That's what we celebrate and remember at this time of year. The season of Advent is meant to be dark. That's why we put lights around the church to remind us that light is coming into that darkness. And Jesus came into a dark, cold, broken world. And he did not come promising that everyone's problems are just going to get solved right away. Right? What he does promise is that when we live our lives the way that humanity was designed to be lived in the first place, that there's hope, that there's care, that there's encouragement, that there's peace, even when things are falling apart. He healed people's bodies. In fact, if you go to the very next verse in chapter 8, what does he do? Immediately, he heals someone. All right, so yes, Jesus healed people's bodies. He cast out demons. He spoke rich truth into people's souls. But they still, like, it's not like their lives just got better right away. They still lived under the tyranny of an oppressive empire, right? They were still taxed into poverty. But Jesus comes with lessons on life that when put into practice can bring about change, real change, social change, heart change, the way that we see and experience relationship with other people, the way that we see the world, the way that we hope in the midst of darkness. If all Jesus did was bring interesting teaching, then that's all we get is information. But his teaching is meant to be put into action. That's when we get transformation. Take my words and put them into action. Whoever hears my words and does it. The difference is not that the storm won't come for the one who chooses the way of Jesus. The difference is that the house remains intact, that Jesus remains with us in the midst of everything falling apart. God with us, like we just sang. Jesus wasn't teaching just to cram more information into our heads. He was teaching to show us a way to live. So the end goal is not to inform us, it's to transform us into someone, into people who are like Jesus, the truest version of yourself, a new way to be human. And this is going to be hard. This is hard for us. Right? Most of us operate under like the false formula that doesn't work. That's basically information plus inspiration plus willpower equals change, right? We know that doesn't work, right? Right? Like maybe you're like the most disciplined person in the world, but there's still too much good information out there to like take it all in and just be inspired to go, 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 go. It doesn't work. Like how many times do I need to like sit there with my dental hygienist like floating over me, telling me I need to floss more? How many times do I need to be shown those pictures like of the gingivitis, right? Trying to convince me to floss. I'm like, wow, okay. Oh, I see what's going on there. I get like, they've genuinely inspired me. They've given me the information that like, by the way, like people with gingivitis will die sooner than people who floss. Have you heard that one? I think it's actually real. Like, if you floss your teeth, you live longer. Like, so I'm inspired. I'm like, wow, that's incredible. Like, information plus inspiration plus willpower, that's going to bring about change in my life. I can not even floss my teeth. Like, that's a very compelling message, all right? But I still can't do it with any sort of regularity, at least. Information plus inspiration plus willpower rarely equals change. So what do we do with a Savior who stands before masses of people and says, you're a fool if you don't do this impossible thing that I'm telling you to do? I said it a few weeks ago. This will be like the third week in a row, and I say it because it is so important. I don't want us to miss it. We have to keep coming back to the final lesson, the final teaching of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in the same chapter. Ask, seek, and knock. Ask, seek, and knock. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be open to you. For anyone who asks receives. To the one who seeks will find, and to the one who knocks, the door will be open. So Jesus lays out the most radical, the most beautiful, the most impossible set of instructions on how to be human that the world could have ever heard. It's beautiful. It's incredible. Then at the very end of the message, he has the guts to look at everyone in the eye with a straight face and say, now go do it. What? But, church, he would not say, do it if we couldn't do it, all right? So how? How do we do this? If you can't do it on inspiration and willpower, how do we do this? Jesus, what does Jesus lean into? You can only do it with prayer. Ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open to you. Jesus opens the door to make the impossible possible for us. Then he says, anyone who hears this and does it is a wise builder. You can't do this, but God can. Ask, ask, ask. Step into this new way of being human with confidence, knowing that the designer of humanity has not left you alone. Now, transformation may not happen overnight, It will require probably a lifetime of asking, God, help me to do this. God, I can't, but you can. It takes a life of practicing, putting into practice the teachings of Jesus in community with other people. Like, I really want to learn the piano, all right? But I get really frustrated because when I go and sit at the piano, for some reason, I can't play the piano. Like, I actually need to practice, okay? We need to practice the way of Jesus. We need to put it into practice. Jesus ends with a bang here. This is a warning, right? Do it. Put it into practice, or your life will be like the fool who built his house on the sand. But it's so worth it, because when, not if, but when the storm comes, we will be well practiced in a way of being human that has been built on the solid rock, that is the words of this sermon on the mount. All right. Mike, you guys can come on up. So now we're left with the reaction of the crowd. All right. So for three chapters, it's been all Jesus teaching. It's been all Jesus teaching. He's giving us information. Now, like, we've just heard the words of Jesus, and now the narrator steps in and gives us the crowd's reaction. And it's beautiful. It's remarkable. And here's what they were whispering among themselves. It says in verse 28, 29, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed by his teaching. Why were they amazed? Because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. He taught as one who had authority. On January 7th, we're going to talk more about what authority means, what that looks like, how can we know what's authoritative in our lives. We live in a world where we're kind of averse to the idea of anybody having authority over our lives besides ourselves, right? But part of the reason that we reject authority is not simply our own deconstruction of the broken authority figures that we've seen and we've experienced, but it's because we've never truly seen authority expressed in a beautiful and captivating way, right? But that's exactly what Jesus was, a captivating, beautiful expression of authority. Look at how the message, this is Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the same verse. He says it this way. It was apparent that he was living everything he was saying. Quite a contrast to their religious teachers. Wow. Like, he's actually living into, he is this personified, perfected human. He is humanity, the way he's teaching and the way that he's calling us into. He was not just giving a self-improvement talk. Jesus was actually living out the perfected life that he was teaching. He was not just a conduit of truth. He was the very personification of what is true. And in just this one sermon, like, he refers to himself as Lord. Think about that. It's not just that he's living this out, it's that he actually is something altogether different than any of the teachers they saw. He calls himself Lord multiple times. He implied that he would be the one who's there at the judgment. He said that his teaching is what they should build their life on. Not the teaching of the Torah, but the teaching, like, which he is lifting up, by the way. But he's saying, do this, this is my teaching. He's calling it all his teaching. No rabbi had ever said things like this. And I point to all of this at the end of this whole sermon series that we've been going through, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount here in chapter 7 of Matthew, to remind us that these are not just words of a brilliant teacher, which he was, but these are words of the living God. This is the Creator teaching the created how life works, how humanity was designed to function. That's the authority with which Jesus speaks. And because Jesus is the truest human, because he represents humanity as it was meant to be, he can speak with an authority that no other human could ever speak. And when all is said and done, his simple question to you and to me, to those who were listening on that day, is this: will you do it? Will you do it? And the sad answer for too many of us is that we won't. Is that we won't. And so we're gonna wrap this series now. We're gonna partake of the Lord's Supper here in just a moment. But I just want to lean into, at this moment, exactly what Jesus calls us to do. To pray, to ask. And what is it he directs us to ask that we might be able to live this out? That we might be able to put into action this very teaching. And so let's just bow our heads for a moment and pause. Like, this is the big application moment. It's like so simple. Just ask. Just ask. Oh, Pastor, but how do I ask the Lord? And so, God, we're here, and I know that my words are broken and aren't perfect, but yours are perfect. Your teaching is perfect. And from what we can tell, it seems pretty impossible too. And so we stand here, we sit here, we gather here in a space like this on a day like today, and we just ask, God, would you show us, would you teach us, would you enable us, would you empower us, would you strengthen us to do what we cannot do in our own strength, what we cannot do in our own cleverness. God, help us to take this beautiful information and put it into action. We cannot do it on our own. So God, I pray for every single person who is sitting here in this room this morning. And I ask that you would empower us to live out, to live into your Sermon on the Mount, live into your teaching on what it means to be human. And God, I do pray for those who are in this space this morning who are like, nah, I'm not sure I want that. God, I just pray that you would bring softness in their hearts, God, that they might want that. We can't do this without you, and we can't do this without each other, God. So strengthen us, enable us, give us grace for one another as we mess it up. We need you. We need you, Jesus. In your name. Amen. Amen. Well, church, we have the privilege to be able to celebrate